One of the most talked about films of summer has to be Inception. The Leonardo DiCaprio mindbender is all about manipulating people's dreams.
You create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their subconscious.
Dreams have always been a handy dramatic device. They allow writers to explore alternate worlds, plots, and what a character is thinking. And here to be our Freudian guide through the world of cinematic dreams is our film critic, Bob Mondello. Hey there, Bob.
Hello. Freudian, I don't know. We'll try.
Well, I saw Inception, and it used dreams in a pretty clever way, sort of layering of dreams. But it's certainly not a new device. And I hear that you can take us all the way back to the ancient Greeks to talk about this.
Well, I take everything back to the ancient Greeks. They had a word for everything. The earliest dream that I could find in Western drama was in the Persians, a play by Aeschylus. In 472 B.C., so that's pretty far back,
yeah.
The queen in that show dreams of her son's catastrophic military campaign and then discovers to her horror that her dreams were true. And as far as I know, that's the first time that a dream sequence was used in a drama that we still have.
So when did the dream sequence make its way into film?
Oh, I think they got there as soon as filmmakers discovered that by doing a doubled exposure, you could create a ghost. And in 1924, in a silent film, Sherlock Jr., this is my favorite dream sequence ever. Buster Keaton is a movie projectionist, and he falls asleep and dreams that he leaves the projection booth and climbs up on the screen and gets incorporated into the movie. And once he's up there, he's subject to all of the movie grammar, you know, like the quick cuts and the odd camera angles and mirrors that turn into doorways and all these neat cinematic tricks. Basically, Keaton was, in an amusing way, teaching the audience about film grammar.
And you can't really talk about dreams in movies, I think, without talking about The Wizard of Oz, which has got to be, you know, one of the more famous dream sequences in film history.
There, lie quiet now. You just had a bad dream.
It's all been a dream, starting with a tornado, basically. Everything that's in color turns out to be Dorothy's dream, but we don't find out about that until the very end.
But it wasn't a dream. It was a place. And you were there.
Oh,
And of course, these days, if you use the whole "it was all a dream" conceit, sometimes that doesn't go over too well.
It doesn't go over too well when they abuse it. Filmmakers and screenwriters sometimes use dream sequences just to get out of problems that they've created for themselves in a script, you know, where it's so complicated that they suddenly realize, oops, that's a dead end for the script. And so they write themselves out of it by just saying, oh, well, it was a character's dream.
Maybe that's why it's so abused in television, where you have this sort of long, you know, periods of character development. So then all of a sudden it maybe feels like a cheat.
Yeah, the classic example of that is Dallas, where at some point they had written themselves so into a corner that they decided the whole eighth season was a dream.
Right.
At that point, the audience sort of rebelled. That it lost a lot of popularity at that point.
Dreams, of course, are such a natural fit for science fiction or better horror films like Nightmare on Elm Street. And I'm thinking of that. You know, you're so vulnerable when you're sleeping.
No, you don't want to fall asleep because Freddy will get you.
We got to stop this.
How?
Don't fall asleep.
Yeah, and science fiction uses it all the time. In The Matrix, the characters were basically doing all of their zipping around through portals and things like that while they were asleep on a slab. In Blade Runner, the title of Philip K. Dick's book that it's based on is Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And Blade Runner actually uses that same notion that Inception does of planting memories that aren't real into somebody's head.
So the challenge for filmmakers is, of course, you know, finding an original take on the dream sequence. And you know, tell me, how do you think that Christopher Nolan, the director of Inception, did?
Well, I don't know that I think it's original exactly, but I think that the things that he did with it, the visualizing of various different levels and things like that, are very clever. There's a sequence in there where there's I'm hesitant about talking too closely about it because
yes,
a lot of
don't give it away.
Right, but there's a trick with mirrors that I thought, you know, as we're looking at this, he's getting at the thing that Buster Keaton did all those years ago, that he's using the movie dream to illustrate something about cinema, that we're sort of seeing how a special effect gets done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes more interesting when he starts to play with his own form there.
That's our film critic, Bob Mondello. Thanks, Bob.
It's always a pleasure.
The dream that you